friends. You're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. My guest is Malachy McCourt, who was born in Brooklyn, raised in Limerick, and then graced us with his presence by returning to the United States when he was 20 years old. Malachy, indeed, I have to say, is a friend of mine for the last 50 years. I'm not proud of it, but fact is fact. And you're very welcome there, Malachy. How are you?
Well, I'm just grand, Adrian. It's great to be on with you and Anya. It's been 50 years, Adrian, and we've chatted over the years and so forth, and I am indeed your friend, but I have defended you against so many people who will say bad things about you, that they say things that we cannot, due to FCC regulations, repeat.
Yeah.
But I can tell people you're not too bad. It's just that you were very fortunate to marry up. That's what dragged you out of your kind of mind. You're a bit dodgy in the mind department there.
Yeah, okay. We're off to a good start here.
Yes.
And, of course, if you want to talk about marrying up, you've had the benefit of being married to the wonderful Diana, and I know that you feel strongly, as I do, you know, in purgatory on the way up, and so Diana won't spend any time in purgatory after what, 56 years? Jesus, she's
56,
yeah.
We're married 56 years.
Yeah.
And that's the most consistent thing I've ever done in my whole life. Would you believe it? I'm going to be 90 next month on the September 20th. And so what I'm doing, Adrian, is I just want you to know that the birthday party, the invited people to my birthday party, and I know that you're coming but anyway, I want you to know what the gift will be. The appreciated gift will be $90,000 each person. Is that okay with you?
It's definitely okay with me. I mean,
where's the check, Adrian?
Can I?
In the mail, Malachy.
Yeah.
Repeat
I'll
after me.
I'm writing the check right now. You'll hold it until, let me see the bank account here. One says 2025. You'll deposit in 2025. Okay?
Yeah. So that's, and
it'll
who's
be out of date
the check,
by then. Yeah.
Can you imagine if people took me seriously, Adrian, and came with 90,000?
Oh my
there
God!
Is a party.
Yeah. Well, I gather though, and I was afraid of this, as you know, because I discussed this with our mutual friend Mike Scanlon, author, actor, and author of the book
Storyteller.
I discussed that, and we were actually, you know, we got hit for your 80th and your 85th, and but the price tag was, you know, much lower that time. You know,
$80,
$80, $85,
yeah.
Very pricey, but that was, you know. So,
look what you got for it. You got that tuna fish sandwich.
Oh, my God, that's true. I had forgotten
that,
about
didn't
that.
You?
Bread was a
the
little...
The coffee
spill.
Was extra.
Oh, and how.
You remember that?
I do. I do indeed. So,
and there was no coffee in the hot water.
Anyway, just so I hate to ruin the element of surprise for your 90th, but Scanlon and myself are whacking it up. We're putting in $45 a piece. And that will be it. Okay,
oh,
and
that will be
and,
it.
And we're going to share the birthday card.
You're not buying a full one.
Now, Maliki, I'd like to talk about your return to America. And you, of course, had loads of experience in doing very little, but the jobs
yes.
that you had. So you arrived. Did you fancy yourself as an actor, an author, a writer? How when you came here?
Not a bit of it, Adrian. You see, I have no formal education. I left school, like my brother Frank. We both left at the age of 13. And you remember the primary certificate?
Oh, indeed, yes.
I failed it, Adrian. So therefore, there was no secondary school for the McCourts anyway, because we were too bloody poor. We lived in a small slum, and the rent, my father deserted us. The two of the kids died, and my sister had died here in America, which drove us to Ireland. The twin boys died over there, and Mike and Alfie were born. And we lived in, then we went to Ireland, and my father took to the drink and deserted us and went to England, left Angela destitute with four kids, and we were on welfare, 13 and sixpence a week, relief, welfare. And a cup, five bob a month, I think it was, to get some food and that sort of thing. And I had gone to England at one point when I was 15. So I had a bunch of jobs there in Coventry and around that area. I was a stoker at the age of 16. I was stoking the fires of Coventry for to supply heat and coal and what have you for the residents there. And then went back to Ireland, and Frank managed to get some money. Anyway, the story is in Angela's ashes. And then he sent for me, and then I sent for Mike, and then we sent for Alfie, and then we sent for Angela. And so that was it. I came, I met some people on the boat, and very simply they gave me a job as I started as a dishwasher. And then I was on the docks, and then I was loading trucks all over the bloody place. And what else did I have? Yes, I got a job smuggling gold to India.
Yeah.
And that was another one. And then I was a bartender. And then some people said, so for some reason, a guy named Tom O'Malley was a booker on The Tonight Show. And he put me on with Jack Parr, and that was the start of my show business. And from there on in, all of a sudden, I'm talking on Merv Griffin and Mike Douglas and Jack Parr and then Richard Harris came to New York, and he was also a Limerick man. And then I got into movies, and then I got a television show for about 10 minutes, then on radio, where I am today, on, as you know, on BAI, with John McDonough. And so here I am, still alive and still babbling.
Mm.
And dodging the Grim Reaper, as they say.
Okay. Which actually brings us to what you said at the time was your last book, and of course I never learned not to believe a word you said in the first place, but your book, Death Need Not Be Fatal.
Yes.
Are you worried about death? What are your feelings about death?
Well, the first part of it is, as you know, Adrian, in America, nobody dies.
Mm.
Nobody dies. They pass away. They're gone. They're at peace. They're with the Lord. They have kicked the bucket or bought the farm. Do you know what bought the farm was, Adrian?
Well, no.
That comes from that when somebody dies, they get the insurance money and they can pay off the mortgage. That's what Bought the Farm is about. And, of course, you know what Kick the Bucket is, of course. That somebody hangs themselves and so on. But nobody dies at peace, at with the Lord, in God's arms, with Jesus, and so forth. Everywhere except dead. D-E-D, Adrian. So it's a no. I'm an atheist, thank God.
Yeah.
As you know. Mm. And so when somebody when I have no I have when I die, which could be in the next 10 minutes, I don't know. I live a day at a time because I'm one of those alcoholic recovering alcoholics, and so I don't drink anymore. So that's I think that also I've been it's 30. That's 35 years sober.
Yeah.
But I have no fears of death. And if there is a God, well, then he or she or whoever it is will welcome me.
Mm.
If there is hell, then I will also get a welcome there because I'm one of them as well. So that's it. But I believe in nature, Adrian.
Yeah.
That's part of nature. I love flowers. I love the sunrise, I love the sunset, I love the moon, I love the stars, I love trees, I love grass, I love Diana, I love my children, my grandchildren, and my great-grandchild, one of them.
Oh, my God.
And
gosh.
So there it is. I got nine grandchildren, one great-grandchild, and five kids. And so they all keep me going, and... there is life, there's love, and there's laughter. There's the three L's in my life.
Wow. Okay. Well, push. One, two, Maliki, you invariably bring up the virtue of getting off the grog.
Yes.
But I want to ask you about the period where among the many jobs in your different facets of career.
Longshoreman as well.
Yeah. But Maliki's Pub on 3rd Avenue, how did that come about?
Yeah, well, that's a very, it is, of course, the usual long story, but let me abbreviate it. I used to go to the theater by myself when I was working on the docks because I got a few bob there at the time. So I went to see the Irish Players, that's who it was, yeah. And they were doing a play on 60th Street. And so then a friend of mine, and I played rugby, but I also was a rugby player, so I played rugby with New York Rugby Club. A friend of mine in the rugby club said that he's gone to a bar down around the corner, Clavin's on 58th Street. So I used to walk from the theater, 60th Street, bringing some of the audience with me. And the guy that owned the bar, Clavin, said to me, if you're going to bring those bloody people in here, you better serve them yourself. So he put me behind the bar. And I started serving people. And then came the Tonight Show and so on and so forth. And then a couple of guys came to me and said, how about opening up your own bar? And they said, we'll finance it. So we opened up Maliki's on 3rd Avenue. And with the publicity on the Tonight Show and various, and people started. It became the first singles bar because of the women's hotel around the corner. And the Barbizon Hotel for women. And the young lady just come in there. But because all the old Irish Puritans up and down 3rd Avenue, the pub keepers wouldn't allow women to sit at their bar. And so they had to sit at tables. And I said, you can sit anywhere you like. And that delighted them. So the bloody place hit the headlines of publicity and there used to be queues outside the door. And I was doing plays with the Irish Players still. And I remember while I was away, and then I was drinking too. So I used to go on toots, you see, and then I wouldn't appear for a few days. But one night I come back, and there's the big usual long line. And I went to go in, but my partners had, the two guys that financed it, had hired a bouncer. And he helped push me in the chest and said, where are you going? I said, I'm going in. And he said, don't you see the queue? Don't you see the line? He said, get to the back. I said, do you see what's on that canopy there? What? He said. I said, Maliki. He said, yeah, what about it? I said, that's my name. He said, everybody says that. Get your ass back to the into the queue. He wouldn't let me into my own bar. So anyway, I went off and didn't go in that night. So there it was. So, but anyway, Adrian, that was how the bloody place boomed. And then, but I drank my way out of it. But other people then financed me in various other bars over the years, about six of them. And then what happened was a guy came to me and said, how about doing a radio show? I hear that they're going talk radio. So that was how I got on WMCA, and I did that for 6 or 7 years. And then they fired me for a story, which I'm not sure, as I think I told that, but I'm not sure it's, I could do it on BAI, but I'm not sure it can be told on this. I don't want to endanger your license in any way, shape, or form, Adrian. So yeah. There was that. So
well, you never actually, come to think of it, Maliki, I never worried too much about that before. I'm asking Anya here to check out with the Federal Communications Commission, and she's waving me off. But anyway, first of all,
but I'm on BAI tomorrow. With John McDonough, as usual, there at 11 a.m. And I'm sorry to take up my commercial time with your
commercial radio
there. But we're non-commercial, John, so we wouldn't sing to any low levels of doing any commercials.
Absolutely.
That's horrendous. We need freedom to be free of selling things and so on and so forth. And I can hear your sponsors now saying, what the hell is he talking about?
Yeah, actually, Maliki, around this time in a normal interview, I would be breaking, for a commercial spot.
Well, that's okay with me if you're aware.
No, as a matter of fact, using my better judgment here, and I'm not too sure that any sponsors would want me to,
you'd rather me than a sponsor.
Well, if you put it that way, we'll start backwards here.
Yes,
John McDonough, an amazing character in the sense that if you, anytime we're in Ireland or tourists are in Ireland, you, more than likely on any given day you get a report live from New York for this guy McDonough.
Yes.
Who is he or was he a cab driver at one
that
point.
That he was, yes. He occasionally gets behind the wheel, and he wrote a play about the about his experience 40 years. He's not on the radio quite as long as you, Adrian, but he's creeping up on it. He's been on BAI for 40 years, but he drove a cab for 40 years in New York City, and he does it occasionally. And his play is opening up next month, in October, at the Irish Center in Long Island City. So it's anyway, John McDonough, he's a very eloquent fellow. He has great stories about being a cab driver. You know the way people, John, say things like only a. But when you're traveling around, with meeting all kinds of people and strange experiences and being robbed and hung up, the people hold you up and with guns, and people get drunk and they throw up and they have babies in your cab. It's a whole bloody amazing full life. And that was John McDonough's. That's what he talks about on his in his one man show, which is terrific.
Now,
off the meter.
Yeah. Now, WBAI is it's public service television, but it's the program itself. Well, it started off anyway as being a platform for the radical left, would you say?
I'm the radical left Irish, yeah.
Yeah. And the purpose, or at least for many years, became, the voice for the actual facts.
Yes.
During the Troubles in Ireland, there was a lot of, and still is, coverage of the North and the conflict and
yes.
the Troubles and everything. It's quite well siphoned.
Limited in a sense to that it was about things strictly Irish, whereas my own thing is that I am of course ashamed of so many of the Irish that have turned conservative. I mean that you eventually the AE, the Irish poet, he said, you eventually become the thing you hate the most. And so here we had 800 years of conservative rule in Ireland, and indeed they tried to dream George III was a conservative. And conservatism is not a philosophy, it's a form of brain damage, because they're generally pretty stupid people, but we're very tolerant of them. America has a place for everybody,
yeah.
and there it is. But I try and generalize. I am as you know, Adrian, I am to the left of Karl Marx. So
yeah.
I'm way out there.
I'm
on the cuckoo's side.
All right. Well, listen, now that you've alienated half of my listeners,
yes.
I think we should move on
to
other topics. A couple of blackguards it was a creation of you and the brother, I forget his name, but you and what's his name. But it was very bold.
Yes,
at the time.
Yeah.
And I would remember that firsthand, because there was a time in my life when one of the things that I had, if not still have in common with you, is pursuing lunatic ideas. And I used to run being the operative word here, of Irish weekends in the Jewish Catskills.
Oh, yes, yes.
And we'd have tremendous, great stars, most of them coming from Ireland, and at one point we could have up to 800 or 900 people who would take the weekends
yeah.
up in, again on the Jewish.
Yeah.
Yeah. And against my better judgment,
yes.
I thought that your play with the brother Frank would be entertaining for my audience. And maybe it's a coincidence, but I think that was the last weekend of the Flannelly rain.
Weekend, yeah.
Yeah. It was, again, if you had to give us a brief description of the couple of blackguards, and for many people who had seen that or experienced that, they'd say, ah, that is so exaggerated. And
yeah. Well, it was Adrian, as Frank's book, Angela's Ashes, of course, just was sold 12 billion copies. And it caused a lot of consternation because there were things in it that were very personal and very, what people called offensive. And then I wrote, based on my experiences, and here in America, that Frank's book was about our childhood in Ireland and the debts and the misery and the discrimination of, because we were poor and barefoot and our arse was out through our trousers and everything. But and then I wrote A Monk Swimming, as you know, that's based on the Hail Mary. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee, blessed art thou amongst women. I thought it said a monk swimming. That's what I call that. So that was a big hit as well. But the blackguards came first. And that was Frank and myself doing this. We launched into it inadvertently at a party up at the Brown's house. And then Frank said, we should write this stuff down. And I said, who'd be interested? He said, the people, my students laugh at the stories, and your people in your bars laugh at them. So why don't we? So we sat down and wrote the bloody thing. And the next thing is, we're all over the place. We went to Chicago. We did it on cruise ships, and we did it, we got off a cruise ship in India, and we did it in India. So therefore, it was all over the place. And it was amazing how a story of what our experiences in Limerick and coming to America, and how it engaged people, made them laugh, and of course it offended the usual conservatives, the poor people there. They're afraid of death, and they're afraid they're afraid of hell. That's it. There is no such thing as hell. Only if you believe in hell, and that's if you believe. And I tell you this now: if you believe in hell, that's where you're going, no matter what. You can't get to heaven if you believe in hell. If there is a heaven, I'm going to be seated at the left hand of God, with Karl Marx, and all the others on the right hand side will have to look left when they stop looking at God's ear, which is growing hair.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they watch.
That's very interesting, yeah.
I thought you might find that interesting. Fascinating, as a matter of fact. And Anya will find it interesting, too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And now that half your listeners have turned off, highly offended, Adrian.
Well, I have always been actually quite interested and looking forward to, to the day where you go one place because the other can't be any worse for me. So, you know, somewhere between those two. Limbo, whatever happened to Limbo, Malachy? And I know that as a theologian, only you could, explain that one to us.
Limbo is where conservatives go. It's because it is for very feeble-minded people. And they're floating in this strange space that's slightly foggy, and they're trying to look up, but all they can do is look down and see the flames that are threatening forever.
Yeah.
But that's where limbo is. That's for conservatives, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad you cleared that up, because I always had a problem with that.
You, you were interested in, because you're like myself. You're always seeking knowledge about other worlds.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Maliki, the acting career, was that, again, was that something you pursued, or were you pursued to partake in the art and a
well,
great
how
artist?
How that happened, Adrian, was that I went to see the Irish Players. They were doing 3 one-act plays on 60th Street. So I walked down the street. Do you remember a place called Rikers? It used to be kind of preceded McDonald's in New York. It was a hamburger joint.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes.
Anyway, I was going to turn into Rikers, but I turned back. And I went back to the theater, and there was a guy putting up a poster, and I said, I'd like to join your group. He said, what? And this is a professional off-Broadway group, and I didn't know about anything. I had no idea that you had to audition and all that, and you had to have pictures, and you had to have experience. He said, do you have any experience? And I said, well, no, I wouldn't need it. I'm Irish. And he said, do you have pictures? I said, I have an autographed picture of Jesus in my wallet. Mm-hmm. And I'm laughing, of course, but he was not amused. But anyway, he said, come back on Sunday and read for us. So I read for them, and that's how I got into the acting. I just walked in off the docks. I went from about $100 a week at that time, and they paid me $35 a week. But then I got the job at the bar.
Yeah.
And that was it. That's how it started. And then I got movies. I got in Molly Maguire's, and I went to Hollywood. I was on Ryan's Hope for 7 years. I played in All My Children for several years in the world.
One Life to Live, another one.
One Life to Live, and I was on Oz. I was in in a series called Oz on HBO for a couple of years. Movies, as I said, and then I had my own television show for about 10 minutes, and then the radio for 7 years, and so on. So that's how it was. It seemed to me that I had nothing to do with it, in a sense, Adrian.
Yeah.
I just being in the right place at the right time. And the thing that saved both of us, I think, was the reading we did, that we were omnivorous readers. So I have always pretended to be educated. Now, some people, including you, have said, you know, you're a terrible liar. And I'm not. I'm very good at it. I'm experienced at lying. I'm one of the greatest liars of all time. That's how I got anywhere, you see, Adrian.
Well, Maliki, I need to correct that. I've never said it, but I agree with you.
I know you. I know you thought it, yeah, but you know you were too polite.
I wouldn't,
because you come from a very respectable family of teachers in Ireland. And also Anya's very respectable, too.
Maliki McCourt, my guest. Let me ask you, though, about the transition from stage to television and to movies. Was the experience on stage, was that of help to you, or what about the medium of television and the screen versus stage?
Well, on television, you have to remember that the managing factor in there is that you don't do anything exaggerated. You don't, on stage, you have to raise your voice. You have to gesture. You have, your expressions have to be very, very expressive and so forth and so on. On television, you just calm down. raise an eyebrow, it seems like you have raised ruckus, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you speak loudly, you'll deafen people, so you don't do that either. So everything is electronically controlled. That is the difference between television, film, and being on the stage. So everything is on stage, gesture. No gesture is too large. That's one of the things. On television, it's like you're roaring if you make a gesture.
Yeah.
So you have to watch out for that. So that's what it is. All you have to do is calm down. And if you think it, it comes through on your face. So that is the difference.
Mm.
I think, anyway. That's my opinion.
So television and screen, for that matter, doesn't... It catered to ad-libbing. It's a script and you stick to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Because, it's quite disciplined. And also, of course, everything is, anything that goes wrong can be edited. So that's the difference. On stage, you can't make mistakes. You're not allowed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that is it. And it's also, and people are examining you, you know, and they notice if your shoelaces are untied or things like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, people notice everything on stage. Yeah. Because you're examined thoroughly.
I want to talk to you about writing, and I would like to preface this by... a personal story that I've only vaguely remember. There was, back in the mid-80s, Monsignor Murray, who was the director of Catholic Charities in the Archdiocese of New York, he talked me into, and of course I was delighted, to be co-founder of Project Irish Outreach at Catholic Charities here in... And it was assumed, since this was not, a pro bono job, that somehow I would be sitting at a desk in 1011 First Avenue... in the Catholic Center, answering the phone and doing that, and I actually didn't read the job description, and since there was none, that was easy. But I had a couple of other jobs going at the same time, so here I am, and I am wondering how I might, continue paying attention. To the day jobs, as it were. And you were unemployed at the time, or?
At liberty.
At liberty.
Expression.
Sorry,
yes.
That's, I'm sorry, yes. I should have, yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't think
right.
of that
I
first.
I don't like correcting you, but
yeah,
there are times.
I know.
Many times you get it wrong.
Yeah, thank you.
That's all,
but,
anytime you want an insult, I'm here for it.
Yeah. So I offered you the job by default, and I didn't bother telling anybody, that my absence, I was using sick days, which I didn't have, and vacation, which I didn't earn. And so here I have my friend Malachy McCourt sitting in Catholic Charities, supposedly answering the phone. I mean, it wasn't a very complicated job. And then found out that actually, this is pre-cell phone, so I would try to reach you an odd time myself. And the phone would ring indefinitely. And then I heard that you were rarely in the office at all, that you were actually down in the cafeteria, regaling the clergy and anybody else who would listen to you and be amused. That was a great experience. You know, it wasn't that good for my position, but you enjoy that. And actually you found out that great members and numbers of the clergy who at that time were not being criticized for any scandals, but they were really regular guys, and they didn't all come from Limerick.
That was it, Adrian, and the Roman collar did not preclude body stories. And I was able to tell them one or two things about my gold smuggling to India, and I was able to talk about my somewhat, affairs and things like that.
Yeah.
And they were getting vicarious pleasure, Adrian, out of my sins. There was. The thing was, they didn't have to confess them, and I didn't feel like confessing them. So, but anyway,
yeah,
the story,
you told them
story.
By way of story. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Now, what is not a make-up story is the smuggling of gold to India.
Yes.
And now, can you set the scene for us? First of all, what decade was that?
1961 and 62.
Mm.
I met a guy and he was very respectable. He was kind of what do you call those New England types, but he spoke, he was Connecticut, and he was very like that. He was very very upper class American, And he said, "How would you like to do a job that involves travel?" And I said, "I'd be delighted to do it." At the time, I was going through a divorce, and I'd go do anything or go anywhere to get out of my agony of the damn divorce. But anyway, he'd involved travel. And so he met me, I met up with him, he introduced me to the guy. And the guy had I don't mean to be, insulting to anybody with a handicap, but the guy had a very bad cleft palate. So anyway, he gave me my instructions. Then I was to take this gold. It was, first of all, I had to go to Zurich. And he gave me these 20 kilos of gold bars, and he put them into a corset-like affair that had pockets in it. And I hung them around my body. And can you imagine, I had to travel from Zurich to Rome and then to Bombay. And I made six trips over a year's period. And every time I sat down, I clumped. I didn't sit. And getting up was agony. And I could imagine this bloody plane. And I missed a plane, my first plane in Rome. And that one crashed in the Bay of Bombay, so we're all lives gone. So I missed that. I took the next one out, and then I got there, and then the next one out, which I also missed, and I wasn't there for it. That crashed. So anyway, I missed two planes that crashed, and anyway, I used to go and meet guys in Bombay, and then deliver the gold. So I did that six times, and it was it's a very long. It's part of the story of monk swimming. So I think.
Mm.
People can go, oh, yes, well, Adrian, I mean to tell you that A Monk Swimming is going to be republished in September on my birthday, 90th.
So. Wow. Yeah.
So
and you have been editing and adding now for month after month.
I just put an extra chapter in there. Peter Quinn wrote a terrific foreword for me, and that's because Peter is a very great writer as well as Frank, not me. I'm not. people said, how dare you write after a Pulitzer Prize winner like your
book. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Fishing for compliments, we'll leave that one to John McDonough. I'm not going to fall for that.
Yes, John is very good at the compliments anyway. Yeah.
Now, the part of your career for which you got handsomely paid, actually not handsomely paid, but paid as you deserve to be, was when, you know, now in my 52nd year of broadcast, there was a period where I was delighted to have you co-host the Flannelly Show and Irish Radio, because a lot of the focus was not on me, but I realized that, you know, there reaches a point where, you know, people get fed up with the same host. And you came in and co-hosted my program, and many of my listeners would be upset.
Yes.
And I would ask them, you know, to write to me so that I would have ammunition to get you thrown off my radio show. And then that could have kept going, but I realized that that was the only focus of the program. Nobody gave a damn what else I did. So I had to nip that one at the bud. But it was it's great, and it's always, it will be the highlight of you know, my career in radio. Anyway, go ahead, respond.
Well, I think, Adrian, one of the strange things, first of all, I was going through a bad economic time, and you were very kind to me at that time. You gave me a job, and you paid me handsomely, I must say. And so it was, I was able to pull myself out of the what I had sunk into due to my own stupidity and so on and so forth. Diane and myself were having some difficulties and so on. But anyway, I know that you're giving me the job and so forth also helped save my marriage, because I was not the best provider at that time. So thank you very much for that. I always appreciated that. And you're a generous, decent man, and you were good to me then.
Okay.
But I did almost get you canceled several times with my rowdy behavior. But also there was a misapprehension there. People thought there was some regulation that enjoined you that you had to keep me employed. And you said, I can't do anything about this, which, of course, was your nice cover-up for actually having me there. Because you could have fired me at any time, but you didn't. And you just pretended that there was an FCC regulation that I was entitled to be on your show. And you asked people for help in getting me off the air, because that's why you asked them to write. But then you said, even that's not enough. I said, it has to be official. So McCourt is on, whether we like it or not, I think was the expression you used. Yeah.
Yeah, but it helped, of course, with, you know, it was credibility in my appeal that you had been thrown off, you know, major, you know, national radio programs. WMCA.
Yeah, that was so, it. I was there for 7 years, and of course, the stories of my troubles there are legendary and legion.
Yeah.
But I managed to make it for 7 years, and then off I went. And they said he's no longer here. That was it.
Yeah.
Then the next thing, I'm on the Adrian Flannelly Show. And, saying, what the hell is going on with this guy?
You know, this, of the many stories, and we had great fun. You know, again, I was referring earlier to our mutual friend Mike Scandler. We had in the midst of all of this tremendous guests, of course, which, you know, made the programs more than interesting. It met a lot of people, and you brought in, you know, some very distinguished guests like Richard Harris, like...
Yeah.
And, but there was a time... Yeah, plenty of them. And, but there was a time when I went to Ireland, and at that... At that juncture, international broadcast was wildly expensive, and it was, you know, it was welcome in Ireland. It was the only radio show that was being presented in Ireland, and it wasn't an RTE, but a couple of local radio stations like Midwest Radio and whatever. And lo and behold, your co-host during that period was my son, Paul Flannelly.
Yes.
And the news had reached Ireland that the greatest Irishman who ever walked the face of the earth, by the name of Jackie Gleason, had expired. And even... You know, even in Ireland, those, even though television wasn't that much embedded in the country in Ireland, but everybody did know that somehow, you know, after the passing of Bing Crosby, there was still another fellow over there who was, you know, very important in the entertainment world. And I was waiting, actually, to hear, you know, an appropriate eulogy. And here you are with my son, Paul, innocent as he was, you know, tearing apart the icon, Jackie Gleason. You know, it was just one more experience. And I didn't know whether, you know, actually, you know, giving up the green card and just staying where I was, or, you know...
Whether to come back?
Or whether to come back or not.
And reclaim your position and apologize for me and Jackie. Well, Jackie Gleason, it was Brendan Behan's play opened on Broadway. Our opening night party was at Jim Downey's, which was a big showbiz place on 8th Avenue.
Mm.
And the opening night where Brendan Behan was there with his wife, and he was sober that night. He wasn't drinking. And so I was invited, and because I knew him, not well, but I knew him. And so anyway, Jackie Gleason was also there, and Jackie Gleason was trying to get Brendan to drink, and he was refusing because he was off the sauce. He had to behave himself that night because the missus was there and all that. Anyway, so finally they threw Jackie Gleason out of Downey's and locked the door, and there he was outside dancing on the sidewalk and banging on the door and everything else, and I told that story. So that's what, I think that was the offensive story I think you're referring to.
Yeah, I think,
but that's
yeah.
all it was, Adrian.
Yeah, but there was no...
But anyway, he died, and that was it. So I thought, anyway, he was a bad drunk, and that's what I said. And you thought that was a terrible thing to say.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you cleared that up now, because now I feel so much better.
Yeah.
Malachy, want to ask you... about the recent years, if God knows you've had your share of health issues that you seem to take with a grain of salt, and as we saw and heard recently, you know, you're going around in a wheelchair, and there was a Malachy McCourt night. Was it City Field?
Where the Brooklyn Cyclones.
Oh, yes.
There was the other thing. The mayor proclaimed St. Patrick's Day, Malachy McCourt Day this year. succeeding Michael Dowling, your friend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he was last year. I was this year. And then they were having Irish Night at the Brooklyn Cyclones, and John McDonough, my illustrious co-host of our show on Sundays, persuaded them to make Malachy McCourt Night. So that was it. So they anyway, I was throwing out the first ball, and I had to sing something, and then I joined a woman, Charlene Moore, in singing "Take Me Out to the Ball Game," and my comment on, you know, "Take Me Out to the Ball Game," what are you talking about? You're already there. Nobody has to take you out. Just anyway, this is remarks like that. And, of course, I open with, as Donald Trump said to each of his wives, "I won't keep you long." That's what I opened with in my speech out there when I was thanking them. So there that was, Adrian. So
your not only ability, but your penchant for writing. And I know from experience, again going back to Catholic Charities, your scroll is worse than most people. Writing.
You're right.
And you get up in the morning, and unless, you know, Diana hides the yellow pad and the pen or the pencil, it's a have to. You have to do it.
Well, I can't. You know, when I was on the radio, Adrian, do you know what my motto was? I can't wait to hear what I have to say next.
Okay. Oh, my God.
But anyway, I do write, and it is people say it's a gift and so forth, but I think it's kind of fun. Everybody, we all have stories, no matter who you are. I mean, I'm always after you to sit down and write, because your command of the language and your experiences, your stories are legion and legendary, because all the people you've had over, 40, 50 years of broadcasting is quite astounding.
Okay.
And that you're still alive is another thing.
Maybe this is a coincidence, but the executive producer of this program here has pointed out that the 20-minute slot, which was designated for this interview, has now developed into almost an hour.
Yes.
So would you ever say goodnight, Gracie, no, or something, you know, yes, so that we know we're coming to the end of what I always know and find is a tremendous experience, and I'm in the right place at the right time, thank God, because, you know, this is an area, never mind my writing, the ability to be able to chat with your friend and to cherish that is something not afforded to a lot of people. So
and
thank you.
And people are, what's happening a lot, of course, at my age, you know, the 90, they're all, they're dying. They're dying. They're very rude people.
Yeah.
Going off like that. And but I'm... as you know, Adrian, I can wind it up by saying my favorite. You know, I'm a member of the Irish American Writers and Artists Association, which I helped
found it. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're always we're always having meetings, and it's so I'm not a singer, and I prove it a lot of times, and but anyway, it is simply this, Adrian. Live every day as if it's going to be your last, because one day you will be right. And that's all you have to do. That's all we have to do.
Thanks.
Don't be afraid of death. It's coming.
It's coming. Okay.
A day at a time.
Yeah, and as your book, which again is, has had a run as bestseller, Death Need Not Be Fatal. Thanks, Malachy McCourt. And
thank you, Adrian.